Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Text 25.
24 and 25.
Pulaho nabito jagye.
Pulastya karnayo rishihi. Angira mukato kshno trir. Marichir manaso bhavat. Pulaho nabito jagye. Pulastyat parnayo rishihi. Angira mukato kshno trir. Marichir manaso bhavat. Pulaha. The sage Pulaha. Nabitaha. From the navel. Jagye. Generated. Pulastyaha. The sage Pulastya. Karnayoho. From the ears. Rishihi. The great sage. Angiraha. The sage Angira. Mukataha. From the mouth. Akshnaha. From the eyes. Atrihi. The sage Atri. Marichihi. The sage Marichi. Manasaha. From the mind. Abhavat. Appeared. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Pulastya was generated from the ears. Angira from the mouth. Atri from the eyes. Marichi from the mind. And Pulaha from the navel of Brahma. Text number 25. Dharmapstana dakshinato yatra narayanak swayam ardharma prishtato yasman mityur loka bayankaraha. Religion was manifested from the breast of Brahma, wherein is seated the personality of Godhead, Narayana. And irreligion appeared from his back, where horrible death takes place for the living entity. Purport. That religion was manifested from the place where the personality of Godhead is personally situated is very significant, because religion means devotional service to the personality of Godhead, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita as well as the Bhagavatam. In Bhagavad Gita, the last instruction is to give up all other engagements in the name of religion and take shelter of the personality of Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam also confirms that the highest perfection of religion is that which leads to the devotional service of the Lord, unmotivated and unhampered by material impediments. Religion in its perfect form is the devotional service of the Lord, and irreligion is just the opposite. The heart is the most important place of the body, part of the body, whereas the back is the most neglected part. When one is attacked by an enemy, one is apt to endure attacks from the back and protect himself carefully from all attacks on the chest. All types of irreligion spring from the back of Brahma, whereas real religion, the devotional service of the Lord, is generated from the chest, the seat of Narayana. Anything which does not lead to the devotional service of the Lord is a religion. And anything that leads to the devotional service of the Lord is called religion. Question, is the heart on the right or the left side?
It's
a little bit to the left, yeah. Not to the right. Okay, I was wondering whether that's why the right side. But anyway, in the Western world, we have a separation of religion, philosophy, and science, at least in the modern world. Religion is involved with God. Philosophy only speculatively. Religion is understood from the Latin word to mean to believe, to have faith, to hold on to something. It literally means to hold on. Religere. Dharma also means to hold on. So the words originally come from the same idea. But there's how they developed in the Western world and in India are completely different. So the idea of religion means to believe in God. And it doesn't have much scope in it for real philosophy and science. Philosophy being the endeavor, you know, just try to understand what philosophy and science are supposed to be. Religion is, you know, they're separated. So religion is supposed to be understanding God and developing our faith in Him and submitting to His commands and serving Him. And so what's philosophy then? Philosophy is study of the truth, searching for the truth. But on all levels, especially trying to find ultimate truth. So originally, religion and philosophy were not separate, even in the West, in the early centuries of the Middle Ages. Philosophy was religion. It didn't have a separate scope. It didn't even have in the university a separate faculty. It was only when classical philosophy was rediscovered, the heathen philosophy of the Romans and Greeks was rediscovered, that philosophy started to assert its independent identity, independent of theology and religion. That we could, without basing everything on love of God, service to God, we can investigate reality in a secular way, in a non-religious way also. And then only later did science rear its head. The study of hard facts, the investigation of physical nature. So in the West they're separate, but in the Indian tradition they're not so much separate. Although, yes, they did develop. Philosophy did develop in atheistic ways. But that was always on the periphery. Orthodox philosophy was supposed to be originally all aimed at developing, at least aiming at liberation. Recognition that Dharma is one human endeavor. Dharma meaning, yes, holding on, but not just holding on to a blind faith in something that you can't really understand as a person, that you can't know the name of God, you can't see His face, but you're supposed to believe in Him and submit to Him. That's blind faith. But Dharma, in the Indian sense, even in general, among all the different schools of belief, Dharma is understood to mean especially doing the right thing. Two aspects to it, doing the right thing and understanding the right in the right way. But it means that there is a natural order in the universe, and it's responsible, intelligent human beings should go along with that order of the universe, not rebel against it, should cooperate with it. That's Dharma. There's two words in the Vedas, Ritta and Dharma. Ritta means the natural order of the universe. And Dharma means our individual participation in that order. The universe has Ritta, and individual human beings have their Dharma. So that's very broad. It's understood in the highest sense to mean devotional service. As Prabhupada quotes in the Bhagavatam here, or alludes to it, Savai punsam paro dharmo yato bhaktirin hoksajay ahoy tukiya pritiyata yayatma supersedati. In very ancient times, the great sages understood this. Some of them were atheists. Some of them were demigod worshippers, but in the early ages, if you were that intelligent, you should understand that service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead is real dharma, or is the ultimate dharma. Later on, things became more materialistic, and dharma was understood in a more ritualistic way. Just perform sacrifice, get elevation to heaven. Whether God exists, whether even the demigods exist, doesn't really matter. What matters is you do the sacrifice and get your good results. Then liberation is not important either. This is the materialistic viewpoint of the Karma Mimamsa school. And many brahmanas adhered to that. They deviated from the higher principle of devotional service to God. This became very prevalent in later ages. So, here, the sages at Naimisharanya are trying to reinstitute the real principles of religion. And Suta Goswami, in the beginning, is giving them some basic ideas. Later, he will introduce the discussion between Shukadev and Parikshit, where Shukadev gives the complete picture. But Suta Goswami is introducing the idea. Savai, Vishakha is coming. Yeah, but Savai pum samporo dharma. This is the highest dharma for all human beings, not just for a selected few, not just for those who happen to think they're Vaishnavas or Shaivites, for everybody. What's the real dharma, the real highest fulfillment of our responsibility as a human being, no matter who we think we are, is whatever is, we can have different conceptions of how to go about it, but the goal should be, whatever we do, it should be to evoke devotion for the transcendental personality of Godhead. Anything less than that is inferior religion. And as Prabhupada again alludes to, at the end of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna sums up everything he's taught to Arjuna by saying, Sarva dharman parityajya, mamekam sharanam vraja. Give up all these other inferior ideas of what you think your responsibility is, and just take shelter of me. Mamekam sharanam vraja. Come to me for shelter. Aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha yishyami. If there's any discrepancies in what you do under my instruction, I'll take responsibility for it. I'll deliver you from all sinful reactions. So he's telling Arjuna, take initiative. Mam ekam sharanam vraja. Not just, I'm going to impose on you my mercy. Or you can do whatever you want, and I'll give you my mercy anyway. No, you have to make an approach to me. Vraja, you come to me. That means you make the endeavor. You show that you really want me rather than everything else. And then I'll give you full protection. So some sadhana, some endeavor to show Krishna that we want to take shelter of him, get his shelter, is required. Krishna is requiring it. Anyway, that's the highest dharma. Bhakti. That's real religion. It's not fully understood in the West, even among all the great religions. Fear of God is more prominent than love of God. And in India too, there have been so many misunderstandings of what dharma is. It's bhakti. Bhakti means ultimately to have complete faith in Krishna and to just love him. To trust him completely and be ready to give everything to him. But there's also the second form of bhakti, which is sadhana bhakti, in which the conditioned soul can practice to come up to that higher level. The two are actually not different. Bhakti is bhakti. What was the example given by Kavi Karnapur gives the example. Rupa Goswami, Jiva Goswami gives the example of a mango. An unripe mango is sour. There's some use of it. You can make, you know, a drink out of it or pickles. But the actual sweetness of a ripe mango is something different. It has much more use. You know, it's much more palatable. The ripe mango. But both the green mango and the ripe mango are the same. They're just different stages of development. A mango is a mango, whether it's paka or kacha. Similarly, bhakti, in both its forms, are actually the same thing. That's why they're both called bhakti, because they're just different stages of development of the same perfection of life. There's pure, perfect devotional service, spontaneous love, and there's devotional service in practice, which is just an immature level of the same thing. Therefore, it has the same name. So when we are practicing sadhana bhakti, even though we are conditioned and reluctant to just surrender to Krishna, we're doing the right thing. We're fulfilling the highest obligation in the best way. We're fulfilling our obligation as human beings. Just to be performing this practice of shuddha bhakti, and that practice comes from the right chest of Brahma, on which chest is residing the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayana. Hare Krishna. Okay, so any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu.
Sometimes now, like, in Germany, where they come in a month, so they're going to the same thing, and three books, somebody is speaking that really good version of the Mahabharata, which in Germany they use it with these.
Yes.
Puts special kindness to shame.
Yes.
And then he speaks the whole three books of Tamila.
Yes.
So,
Sometimes spiritual authorities, persons who actually are very elevated spiritually, present themselves as if they were less advanced in order to give guidance to certain classes of people who are not qualified for the higher thing. So Jaimini taught, if this is all true, then the same Jaimini who we take to be a materialist is a great devotee. So, it's not that the great devotee is the great materialist is posing as a devotee, or the other way around. So let's take it. Let's be kind to him, and assume that he's a great devotee, and he's only pretending to be a materialist rather than pretending to be a devotee. Anyway, Sanatana Goswami would not acknowledge him if he was just a fake. So okay, he's really, you know, a very pure devotee, but in the Karma Mimamsa Sutras, he's presenting himself as a materialist, or at least he's presenting the ideas of a materialist. That's to suit his audience. That's his assigned duty, is to present this philosophy. The philosophy in many ways is useful, although it is misleading by de-emphasizing or even claiming that it's totally unimportant whether the absolute truth even exists. And those parts of the Vedas, namely the Upanishads, which present understanding of the absolute truth, are not important. The only important parts of the Vedas are those that give us injunctions to perform sacrifice, because by performing sacrifice we'll become successful in life, not by speculating about some absolute truth. Those sections in the Upanishads that talk about the absolute truth are just what we call artivad, which in his technical sense means just encouragement, you know, glorification of something, just to encourage you to do your sacrifice. God is glorified. The idea of an absolute truth is glorified just to make us feel encouraged to go about our sacrificial duties. Whether there is such a thing as liberation doesn't matter. Whether there is a personality of God, it doesn't. This is what Jaimini actually teaches in the Mimamsa Sutras. So he's talking like a materialist, like an atheist. But he isn't. Similarly, Swayambhuva Manu. Next principle is Abhyasa. What's repeated over and over again can be accepted as the real idea. So because the identity of Ananda with the Absolute Truth is repeated, therefore we accept that, that the fifth Purusha is the Absolute Truth, not the individual soul. That's using the principle of interpretation taught by Jaimini for the purpose of, by Vyasadeva, for the purpose of understanding the correct meaning of the Upanishad. And so Vaishnava Acharyas very often use these practical principles of a Mimamsa interpretation for settling philosophical questions. There's another principle, it's mentioned by Baladeva Vibhushan and others. Paramatam apatishinam anumatam. Even an opponent's opinion, when it's not specifically contradicted, we can accept. We have some things we don't agree with in the Mimamsa philosophy, but those things that we don't have specific argument with, we can accept. We can take from each of the, even the atheistic philosophies, we can take practical things from them. So the practical thing that the Mimamsa philosophy has that everybody takes advantage of are the standard method of interpreting scripture. That's a contribution of Mimamsa. Most philosophers accept and use that. And the Gotama's Nyaya philosophy is also unacceptable to us for various reasons, the way they see the world, we don't agree with. But he gives a very good method of epistemological analysis, of understanding what are the means of knowing, and especially of understanding logic. So we use his analysis of logic, and even his analysis of the other means of understanding, perception, Shabda Praman. Most philosophers, including the Vaishnavas, take from Gotama that, his practical analysis of means of knowing. So it serves a purpose, serves a practical purpose. And it fills the need of a certain audience, people, Brahmins who want to perform sacrifices. Jaimini teaches him how to do it, even though he's actually a great Vaishnav, and his interest is not just in ritualistic performances. And he doesn't even agree with all the things he's teaching in the Mimamsa Sutras. That's not our business, to descend to a lower level. You know, let's go teach vegetarianism. Devotees do that. But actually, Prabhupada wasn't so interested in that. That we get involved so much in politics or teach sub-religious principles. Our business is to teach, you know, present the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He wasn't interested in sub-religious principles.
Even if it is,
Well, that's by extension. Because the identifying Brahman as the Anandamaya, that means Brahman is always blissful. The living entity, being part and parcel of Brahman, is also always blissful. Okay, so it's not the same argument, but it's also that also comes from the same. Once you establish that, then the corollary of it is that the living entity is also Ananda, full of bliss. So it's a corollary. It's not the main idea, but it's a derived idea. Okay. All right, so we stop here. Thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.